Well, good morning, everybody. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? I've heard that for 40 years. That same song, yeah. Irv Evans picked it out. Does everybody here know Irv Evans? Do you know Irv Evans? Irv was an extension agent in Wake County, and he started this show with me. Or we took over from the late John Harris, the Tar Heel Gardener. But, yeah, that's what Irv picked out. And so we've been running with it ever since. Welcome to the WPTF Weekend Gardener. Mike Rayleigh here, back from vacation. Getting up. I've been getting up fairly late for me, you know, 7, 8 o'clock while I've been at the beach, and this was a little tougher this morning. So and then I got 3 o'clock to look forward to on Monday.
Oh, gosh.
Wow. I know. It just rattles the brain. Well, I am joined, thankfully, by Brother Rufus. Sir, it was good to see you.
And good morning.
Glory.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good
we got
here.
A great cast here today, you know.
I'm telling you, we do. Amanda Wilkins Bratcher is here, and she's Lee County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Specialist. And thank you.
I like that.
Yeah.
Horticulture specialist.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
And Dan Stern is Director of Horticulture at the Botanical Gardens in Chapel Hill. Dan,
Amanda, welcome.
Great seeing y'all very, very much. And thank you for driving over here. This is good news or bad news. We only have 2 hours today.
Oh,
because of the Tar Heels football game. We have two Tar Heels here, so...
Bless your heart.
I'm not going to say what Mike put on his email.
No, please don't do that. Big Daddy may be listening.
He called me.
I was disturbed. I was disturbed that we were, you know,
we're compromising
cut by an hour.
Compromising gardening journalism for sport. Just
I know, but
Rufus has got to get to the 50-yard line. So.
Well, that's true. Are you going to the game today?
No, not today. I'm going to take it easy and finish a book on my friend Gene Boyce, who's worked in Watergate with me and has been a great lawyer. And to the tens of thousands of state employees, he's the guy who for 8 years did not give up on suing the state when they wanted to tax the retirement benefits of all the state and federal employees. And so I'm reviewing the book, going to write a forward to it, so... I'm going to devote that in between coming out and walking in the garden. Read an hour,
well,
walk
just
an
sit
hour.
Out, sit out in the garden.
That's a brilliant idea.
Stay out in the garden
and
do it today. It should be a nice day, I guess.
That's how I made it through my master's thesis. If it were not for working for an hour and taking a 30-minute break and working for an hour, 30-minute break, I would have probably lost my mind.
I suppose so. So, Dan, what's going on with the botanical gardens? I know y'all have something big coming up. Y'all always do, though.
It does seem that way, we've got our big fall plant sale coming up next Saturday, the 28th, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. We're going to have over 150, maybe pushing 175 different species of plants available. So it's really like we pull everything out of the back of the house, everything from ferns to grasses, sedges, flowering perennials, trees and shrubs. So it's a wide selection. I'm going to have my staff working the sales floor, helping people figure out what's going to work for them in their yard, in their spaces. The weather is cooperative. It's going to be an amazing day, so everybody should come out.
Yeah, I hope it will be at Native Plants.
Native to the south. Yeah, that's right. Native to the southeastern U.S. That's our wheelhouse.
It sure is at the Botanical Gardens. You can learn so much there, and we quite often have a lot more success with native plants in our landscape.
They have been around for millions of years here, so they're like pretty used to the place.
Yeah, we have adapted other things, of course, favorites like camellias and so forth.
For sure,
Amanda. But native is—I know you believe strongly in native plants.
I do. Yeah, I'm not a native only person, but I certainly I think that the group overall is wildly underappreciated because we did bring that kind of European novelty of our fascination with the Far East, and we brought that with us when Europeans came to this continent. But we really overlooked how incredible the native flora was, but also how similar. There's a lot of overlap between the species that occur here in the southeastern United States, as well as in the East, because of that kind of biogeographic history. Similar history. So there's lots of things that are native to Asia, but that also have native relatives here, and sometimes are even prettier, in my opinion, than some of the Asian species. So a wildly underappreciated group, but we are very fortunate to have the North Carolina Botanical Garden working every day to show how those can perform in the landscape. And I'm always encouraging folks to go to the Botanical Garden just to see them featured, because that's not to say that the Duke Gardens and Juniper Level Botanic Garden and the J.C. Ralston don't include native plants in their landscapes, but I will say the North Carolina Botanical Garden, you guys put that on front and center and really get to appreciate that they are just as good landscape plants as, you know, some of the ones that we get from the more Asian neighbors.
You mentioned Juniper Gardens. Tony Avens, you were looking at an article that he wrote in the latest Weekend Gardener magazine, but Tony believes in diversity in the plant world. Don't plant a monoculture, he says. So I'm sure everybody in this room feels that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gosh, there's so many plants.
There's more than 450,000 known plants, and there's probably pushing like 700,000 species that we just don't know about. I mean, the African continent is so underappreciated by Western science, and we're always learning something new about South America. And you know, just looking at Polynesia and the amazing diversity of species that are occurring in Indonesia and those Indonesian islands. There's more than 1,000 islands in that whole archipelago. And my good friend of mine did her PhD in begonia diversity in Indonesia, and there are more than 2,500 species of begonias, and there's like a new one like every single day they figure out. But you know, there's all these crazy species that can just kind of proliferate at kind of the, you know, the tail end or the kind of the branch tips of evolution, and it's so cool to kind of be there looking at them when they come into existence. And so we are still learning new things about plants every single day, and I think it's really important for people to know that. And I think as humans, we use our gardens to celebrate that diversity and bring it home and really appreciate that. That's what a lot of people use their gardens for. So that's my philosophy anyways.
Absolutely. You know, I went to, I was up at Hanging Rock State Park last weekend and just, you know, admiring sort of the diversity just in this one state park, from like up high on the ridge where, you know, there's hemlock, dry, you know, sort of rocky bluff species like chestnut oak, black gum, but then like get down a little lower elevation, a little moister, you start seeing, you know, tulip poplars and deciduous magnolias. And, you know, just in this one site, I was like, this really illustrates just how diverse North Carolina is. You know, we have elements from, you know, boreal forest, you know, up north to elements of like a subtropical environment. So we're like the meeting ground of so many different plant groups. We're just so fortunate to have this diversity in North Carolina and the Southeast.
Amen to that.
I visited a neighbor, Phil's last weekend little gathering.
Phil Campbell.
Yep, Phil Campbell.
Yeah.
And I noticed a whole side of her yard was just chock full of wildflowers.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, how'd you do that? She said, well, I ordered a huge bag full, spread them out, and then took dirt and just lightly covered them. And it was just a plethora of absolutely fantastic looking, beautiful wildflowers. And she said, they will seed over, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a couple areas that I'm now going to do that with.
Mm.
That's great.
Speaking I have thoughts on that.
You got thoughts on that? Well, let's hear them. Because...
Oh, Lord. Well, so, yeah, and please chime in, because I've been doing a lot of research on these wildflower strips, because people, especially this time of year when they see the Biden's Aristosa, mm-hmm. so that I always want to call it Aristotle, and I know that's not what it is.
Tell our audience what you meant with that word.
Biden's Aristosa if you go around Chatham, Lee, Moore counties, and you're on the side of the road, there's like a bunch of like yellow flowers. That's probably what you're seeing. Now, obviously, there's a crap ton of other.
I call them swamp daisies.
Well, so, okay, dangerous common names, but that's a whole other thing.
People are thinking of yellow and goldenrod this time of year.
Exactly. Yeah, there's so many other little yellow flowers, yeah. Which,
sneezeweed?
Hellenium.
Got a lot of
Hellenium.
That down
Let's
the
call
coast.
It something nice.
Sneezeweed. But I think you're right. Like if you're driving along and you see a big swath of yellow, buttery yellow,
mm-hmm.
and it's like higher than your waist, it's probably Biden's.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
No, nothing's wrong with
no,
that.
No, nothing
That's
is wrong with that.
Plant. Now you're getting to a point though about my getting ready to get a bag of wildflower seeds.
So I've got a lot of clients who think that they want wildflowers, especially this time of year when they see them all blooming on the side of the road. And there's actually a technique to it. There's a technique, but also that's really important when you're sourcing wildflower seeds, because not all wildflower seeds are native. Some people think that, because they're wildflower seeds, that means they're native, and that is right. not true. And you really have to be very discerning when you're sourcing your seeds, because they'll say, North Carolina wildflower seeds. And people go, these are things that I see on the side of the roads. And you have to look for what species are in that seed mix and start doing a search on those names, because a lot of times these companies will not list if they're native to the Southeast or whatever. They just put them in there and people assume that they're native. And please don't do that, because if you're really wanting to go native and wanting to celebrate our diversity and recreate something that you see on the side of the road that you want to bring into your landscape, planting a lot of these wildflower seed mixes is not what's going to happen. Also, there are a lot of non-native species. I've seen some, if you Google North Carolina wildflowers, the top 10 searches that came up in some of the things that I've done, 9 out of 10 of them only have a few native species in the whole seed mix. So make sure you're looking for native seed mixes, and then still be discerning, because there are a lot of people who do not. There's some seed companies that don't do their homework, and they just assume that because so-and-so seed said it was native, that it's native, and it's not.
Well, let's take, for instance, Cosmos. I saw that. Is that native?
Mm-mm.
Not here.
Okay.
Maybe mm-hmm. in Texas.
Mm-hmm. So there are three seed companies here in North Carolina that I tend to send folks to. The Botanical Garden is one of them. The Botanical Garden does offer Wild Collective native wildflower seeds.
I appreciate that.
I was getting ready to ask that.
Yep.
Yeah.
But the other two that I recommend, at least in this kind of central North Carolina region, is Garrett's. What a native seed. They're out of Four Oaks, Dunn, Johnston County, Harnett County area. And then Mellow Marsh seed, or Mellow Marsh nursery. And you can buy bulk amounts of seed from both of those companies. Those guys are going out and they're collecting seeds from North Carolina and offering them out off to folks. And they have some really good planting guides that can actually make sure that you are, actually going to get what you're trying to do. You know, talk about appropriate time of seeding, you know, what you need to do to prepare the soil. It's not as easy as just going out there, spreading some wildflower seeds, and then voila, things are going to pop up. There is some site prep you've got to do. So.
Okay, buy from the Botanical Garden, or what are the other three? Because people are going to ask again.
Mellow Marsh. And Garrett's Native Seed or Wildflower Seed, I think is what they're called.
Right.
There are two other like national companies, and please, Dan, like pipe in. These, I'm just like recalling these off the top of my head. Ernst Seed is based out of Pennsylvania, and they offer some regional seed mixes, but you still have to read their label. They will sell wildflower seed mixes that include non-natives. And then Roundstone Seed is in Kentucky.
That's right.
And they have really picked up on this native wildflower seed industry because there is a huge need in the industry for native ecotype seed. And maybe, Dan, you can probably take over because I feel like I'm stealing your thunder now.
Oh, no. I appreciate those references.
Yeah, we can buy those next week when we go to the plant sale, right?
Yeah, we will have seed packets available in our gift shop. Yeah.
In large bulk?
We don't sell seed mixes, sort of individual species.
Okay.
But I think Amanda's right. Mellow Marsh, Garrett, good choices. I've been, and if other folks are interested in finding more sources, we've got a section on our webpage under plants and resources for gardeners of a recommended sources for native plants and seeds. And I've been really encouraged. There have been a number of new people coming into this space recently, some in North Carolina, some elsewhere in the Southeast, where they're really paying attention to the details about what its native range is and keeping track of where they collected the seed from and what its ecotype is. And we've been working with Roundstone for a few years now. We're growing essentially some kind of keystone species out at one of our nature preserves, and then harvesting seed and then sending that seed to Roundstone so that they can kind of scale up production of it. So it's not just native, but we know that the genetics of that particular plant, and of that seed is from the middle of North Carolina. We're sort of keeping track of that information. So that's kind of the highest and best, right? Using plants that, have the right genetics for your, for your ecosystem.
Well, you all wouldn't turn me in if I put a little cosmos in there, would you?
No, Rufus.
Turn you into what? To who?
To the plant police.
Well, they're very fortunate. In North Carolina, we don't have any of those. No, you know, gardens are one of those things. I don't know if you're on. There's a couple of listservs where some of the best and brightest of the botanical botanist world kind of have discussions about rare plants, but there's been a recent kind of resurgence of this conversation about native versus non-native and versus, kind of going back down to that like landscape ecotype conversation. And somebody, I think it was Mike Shafley, who said, there's something, even if you're using native plants, there's sometimes something inherently just, it just supersedes anything, natural, because humans, we're just totally recreating something new that, Mother Nature would probably go in a different direction. And philosophically, you kind of have to, you have to make your own decision on that one. So if you want to have purple and white and magenta cosmos in your wildflower seed mix in your yard,
Rufus, go forth
and do good.
but let's keep the invasives out.
Yes,
out of there,
that is
Well, I won't mix any stilt grass in.
Thank you.
Well, that's
great case in point.
Although I do mow it down. I mow a lot down. I couldn't combat it any other way.
Mm-mm.
And when it's mowed down to about an inch, you can't tell the difference. And so you learn to live with certain things.
We do.
Yeah, there's an interesting point there. Mowing is a great technique this time of year. But if you mow stilt grass too early in the year,
spread the seeds.
It starts making clonal seeds about an inch off the ground. So it's one of those that we take different strategies to getting rid of stilt grass depending on what time of year it is.
Ooh, that would be a great gardening guide to write up, actually, like what your stilt grass strategy is for the year.
Month by month, right?
But I have a lot of people who ask me about that, and unfortunately, my go-to for people, because they don't really, I don't know the timing down to the month, which I would love to learn. I usually just, I encourage folks to use a grass selective herbicide, because a lot of times it's the only grass in a bed that people have to deal with. But I would love to have a physical, chemical, mechanical strategy. So make one of your horticulturists write that one down for us.
Yeah. Well, again, anybody that has gardening questions like that, you know, I'd encourage folks to visit our website, ncbg.unc.edu. We've got a section there called the Green Gardener Clinic, where folks can ask gardening questions, want to learn more about native plants or get recommendations, even upload pictures of things that they want ID help with.
Maybe somebody over there ought to write a book.
That's a good idea.
People still like to hold a book in their hands.
There's some really great books you guys have on your website.
Yeah.
And people that teach classes over at the Botanical Garden.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So it's a fun place to visit. I would highly encourage that. And you have a chance, really good chance, next week. Dan, reiterate.
Yeah, the fall plant sales next Saturday, September 28th, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. We'll have over 150 different species of native to the southeast native plants of all different makes and models. And we'll have lots of staff on hand to help answer questions and help people find stuff that will work for them.
What time and how do we get to the Botanical Garden?
We're at 100 Old Mason Farm Road in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. So we're just south of the Dean Dome, if that's a landmark that people are
Absolutely. Well, at least for a while.
Yeah,
we don't know
for
where
now,
the new
right?
one's going to be.
I don't know what we're going to say in 10 years.
So, and what are the hours for
it's 9 a.m. to 1 p.m.
9 to 1.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Get over there. Got to get up early, guys.
That's right. That's right. 919-860-9783. We're on until 10 today because Tar Heels have a football game. You brought in a spider lily.
I did. Well, I brought in a Lycoris radiata.
Big naked lady.
Well, so I wrote an article, Dan. So I posted to our Facebook page 30 minutes ago. I'm afraid to open our Facebook at the regional at the Lee County office. I wrote an article last weekend called "Surprise: The Naked Lady Hurricane Is Coming." And because when I first learned about Lycoris, they were called hurricane lilies.
Right.
And then I learned them as spider lilies, and then somebody said they're surprise lilies, and then somebody surprised me by calling them naked ladies one time. And so my article is a little bit about kind of the dangers of common names, but also where all these names kind of originate. But my article, and I learned this at Juniper Level Botanic Garden, you know, the Chinese, these are primarily an Asian, it's an only an Asian genus, but the Chinese have called them "and the earth smiles."
Oh,
that's
wow.
what their name means in Chinese. Name. And I love that. Like, that's just like the poetry of it. And it's very loved in Japanese and Chinese art because it is so, I picked probably the best looking one in my yard. It is just so
it is pretty.
Structural.
Yeah,
and
no leaves,
you can't make it up. Like it's just it's so poetic in its own self. So
I was mentioning to Dan coming in that I have some yellow ones.
Yes,
but they seem to come later,
and we'll talk about the yellow ones coming up here at WPTF.
It's a beautiful morning. I think I'll go outside for a while and just smile. Just take it some clean, fresh air.
Yeah, that probably should be. I should change things up sometime and add that to our list of opens for the hour.
It is really pleasant.
It's nice. I hadn't even thought of it. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate that. You're listening to The Weekend Gardener here on WPTF. Mike Rayleigh here along with Rufus Edmonston. And Amanda Wilkins Bratcher from the Lee County Cooperative Extension Service, and Dan Stern is the Director of Horticulture at the Botanical Gardens in Chapel Hill, where a big plant sale is going on. We're only on till 10 today. Football game, UNC playing today, so we'll be off a little early, an hour early. Well, that's a lot, actually. But Dan, run through what's going on at the Botanical Gardens next week.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. We're doing our annual fall plant sale next Saturday, the 28th, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Come out. We're going to have a great selection of southeastern native plants, flowering perennials, ferns, grasses, shrubs, trees, you name it, we'll have it. And I'm going to have a lot of staff on hand to help folks figure out what will work for their yards. But southeastern natives are such a great way to sort of bring some of the diversity of North Carolina into your own yard and, you know, do something that will support wildlife and, you know, add beauty to our spaces. So we've got a lot of great plants to choose from. You know, this time of year, we're seeing a lot of the late summer hibiscus and firework goldenrods, just a lot of really beautiful stuff to pick from.
We were speaking of yellow flowers a few moments ago, and when we were in Israel in March, March, there were yellow flowers all over northern Israel.
Mm-hmm.
What were they? Do you have any idea? I mean, that's the only thing I saw blooming.
There's quite a few things that occur in the deserts of
mustard.
The Middle East. It could be. Oh, they were the big fields of things. So, yeah, probably canola or rape or, you know.
So pretty.
Yeah, Brassica oleracea. And we don't really grow that too terribly much here in the South. That's usually a northern climate thing or European thing. But, yeah, the deserts of the Middle East are incredible centers of diversity. Just like the southeastern United States, they're very biogeographically rich because the soils are very unique and because of the topography of the mountains and the hills and the way that kind of the volcanoes used to be. There's all these mountainsides that have these like crazy, you know, species that only occur on one side of the mountain or the other. And there's a lot of things in the pea family, lots of things in the mint family. And then they can be very beautiful, especially if there's just even a little rain, kind of like our deserts in the southwestern United States.
Hills, mountains near the Sea of Galilee, we were kind of hiking up there. I mean, we just got out of the bus and we were walking up. And I fell. And my hands went in a patch of briar. It's the only thing I can think of. And I was picking those things out for weeks.
Wow.
I don't know what that was. We had a physician on the trip with us. He said, "You want me to get those out for you?" I said, I'll work on them. But I'll tell you, I'd never seen anything like that in my life.
Hmm. Well, if you think about the desert, the plants that are living there, proliferating there, they're finding water somewhere, and so they have some sort of protection, whether it's chemical or physical, and physical in the case of spines or prickles or things that get stuck in your skin, or in the case of an animal, will get in your nose and deter you from future grazing, but
They're not
protecting.
Getting it from the Jordan River, I'll tell you that.
Well, when I visited there,
it's not much
the last time, or middle time, in 1986, I planted a tree on the Golan Heights, and I've often wondered, is that tree alive?
Mm. I hope so. What type of tree? An olive tree?
I don't know what kind it was. Yeah. I just had a shovel, stuck it in the ground, and left real quick because I heard a bomb coming.
Oh, well.
And you mentioned the Jordan River. I remember Governor Hunt and I said, let's dip our toes in the Jordan River. And you read about the river so many times when you're in the Bible. And it was about as far from here to the door wide. I thought, boy, am I disappointed in that Jordan River.
Yeah, it varies, your location, where the site where John the Baptist supposedly baptized Christ is a little bit wider.
Right.
And, you know, it's right there. I mean, Jordan.
Well, I could have waited this
way to Jordan.
Not above my ankles.
River was a little
Dan,
wider.
Dan, I want to show you something. You know what that is? I'm going to test you and Amanda.
Yes.
Is this a trick?
Dichroa thimba flutie flop. It's blue ginger, but it's not a ginger at all.
Oh, is that?
Well, is that
the ginger lily?
That is the ginger lily that
I
Dichrysandra.
About 40 years ago, and okay. I divide it every year.
You can buy them at the airport.
Yeah, this was
really?
A little
twig
about an inch in diameter, and I stuck it horizontally in the ground. And I've given more people this plant, and of course it won't last outside, but it's I call it the
beautiful
Hawaiian ginger lily. You were
That's
right.
That's not entirely true. Tony has one that does persist outside.
Oh, my goodness. I want it.
Dichrysandra thursiflora. So Dichroa thimbrifugia is a member of the hydrangea family. I'm sorry.
Let me see that.
My brain.
Oh, my goodness.
Hey. If you can keep
Just
even a handful
Amanda.
Of scientific names in your head, they
you've
all start
had that,
sounding really
You've had how many really years, Rufus? You've had it a long
At
time.
At least 40 years.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, here, I'm here to educate Rufus.
You certainly are. I'm headed to see Tony. I would love not have to truck that thing in every year. Yeah.
So you haven't had to? I mean, you could have left it out?
Well, if I get Tony's, according to Amanda.
Oh, okay.
Well, and give yours a try, too. Just put in a protected spot and mulch it in the wintertime.
Yeah.
I know for a fact that it grows quite reliably in Mobile, Alabama, which is zone 9A to 10A.
Okay, I've got just the spot.
August, September is when we see ginger lilies here, mm-hmm. especially if they're planted in the sun mm-hmm. like they're supposed mm-hmm. to be. So I love the fragrance, kind of a honeysuckle fragrance.
I love the ginger color too.
Yeah, that one doesn't really. I've never smelled it, and it's not in the ginger family technically. It's in the dayflower family, Commelinaceae. Mm. But I probably mess that up at the end.
But that foliage looks a lot like ginger plants, right?
It does.
So I can see that. Yeah,
like a corn stalk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
919-860-9783. More of the Weekend Gardener coming up here on WPTF. It's 8:45. All right, we're back on WPTF. It's 8:50. I don't know what I'm doing. What am I doing?
You've only been
here?
Doing this for like 40 years or something like that.
No, I've been doing it for 50 years. this show for 40. I mean, you know, I got some experience doing what? I don't know. Joyce is in Sanford, and she's over at Yarborough. She was expecting us to be there today. I would have bought
yeah,
you
we
some.
Thought she was on
Joyce, I'll tell you, yeah, but unfortunately, it's been postponed. So we're in the studio, and you drove. I hope you didn't drive too far to see Rufus.
Far out of Sanford.
Okay.
It's okay.
Well, if I were there, I'd buy you some ice cream.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah, I love Yarborough.
So much.
I don't usually get ice cream at Yarborough, so I usually get a meal. But the ice cream is good too. You know, it used to be a dairy.
Well, if you decide to come later, please announce it. So,
we'll announce it. Okay. We'll announce it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
As long as I know, we'll be there. As long as I know. Yeah.
We're always improving.
It's always nice if I know. But, yeah, we had a great time when we were down there, and I love Sanford. It's such a pretty place, and my wife has so many ties there. So many ties.
Well, I will ask you one question. When you cut eucalyptus, how do you keep it fresh? Some of the florists in town sometimes want some, and I don't know how to keep it fresh to get there. If you cut it today, I guess I need to take it right then.
Yeah, because people like to, I mean, it does, I mean, you can keep it for a while.
Most definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it's a dried flower type thing.
Yeah.
Well, whenever you're doing cut flowers, especially for selling for florists, you should cut early in the morning before the heat of the day gets going, and you should be cutting and putting directly into clean, fresh water in a clean bucket. The cleaner you can keep your tools and the water and the bucket, the better. The cooler you can keep the plants, the better. And then get it directly to the person or get it into a cool, dry, a low humidity place. And with eucalyptus, if you're selling it for a cut flower to go into an arrangement, you need to keep it in water. But if you're drying it, you need to clean it and then get it into a place where you can dry it and get the water. Don't put it in water. Hang it. Make sure there's good air movement.
Yeah.
Hang it by its, hang it by its feet.
Yeah, hang it by its feet. Yes. Yes,
hang
yes.
It by its feet. Well, I have some in my bathroom, in my shower. I hang it there because it makes the bathroom smell good.
Yeah, yeah, I love the, I love the fragrance. We excuse me, we have a tree, a eucalyptus tree that got very, very tall. And then at Christmas a couple of years ago, whenever we had the really cold Christmas.
Yeah. 9 degrees.
Yeah. It died down to the roots. The roots apparently okay because it's come up again and it's, you know, it's 10 feet tall.
That's what a lot of people who grow them, they coppice them. They'll cut the switches because you want the nice long, you know, pretty
right
stick. And if you keep cutting it back 2 or 3 times a year, you'll always have that proliferation of long, long spikes of foliage, kind of like what a crepe myrtle does, you know, when you hack it back to nothing.
Mm.
They're very vigorous plants.
So did you get ice cream this morning, Joyce? Or
not yet. Not
okay.
Yet. We haven't gotten any ice cream yet.
Okay. Well, what's your favorite ice cream there?
I love their ice cream. It's homemade.
I know, but what's your favorite flavor?
Oh, butter pecan.
Hey,
oh,
man.
I like that.
Right. There you go. There you
that
go.
That sounds good. Now, I like strawberry. It's yeah. always. It's not always. You can't always find good strawberry, but. Yeah.
Well, Joyce, I hope you go over and at least say hi and to the Sanford Farmers Market and go get you some fresh vegetables.
Yeah, go to the Farmers Market. That's a nice area over there, right across the street.
Yeah.
In the parking lot.
Yeah, I won't waste my day, I tell you that. I'll just put you on hold for the next time.
All right. Well, that's fine, Joyce. You enjoy your day, and thank you for calling and wondering where we are.
Well,
we're all cooped up in this studio is where we are.
Oh, she said they're not all there.
I'm worried about you.
Yeah, well, we are not all there. I mean, some are here and some are not. I'm still on Topsail Island or Kiowa.
I don't blame you on that.
Well, I hope your favorite team wins today. I hear you're going to the ball game.
No, I'm not going to a ball game. We're being cut by an hour by a ball game.
Thank you, Joyce. I will be hoping for a UNC win.
I hope so, too.
Bless your heart.
Hello.
Is that Rufus?
Yes, it is, Joyce.
Okay. See you the next time you're in Sanford.
Rufus likes butter pecan, too.
Oh, does he?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Some places don't have it anymore.
I know.
Uh-huh.
People, these places are getting so uppity. They got strange flavors.
My next favorite is cherry vanilla at the NC State Creamery on Lake Wheeler Road.
You do a lot of business over there, don't you?
Absolutely.
Howling Cow
Cherry
Creamery.
Howling Cow.
Howling
Joyce,
Cow.
It's an ice cream place on Lake Wheeler Road. Run by NC State students.
It's right on the
phenomenal.
Farm.
Phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. It's right on the farm there. It's just like they have served at the fair with the long lines there, and it takes forever to get it.
Mm-hmm.
But and they still have lines at this place. But
now, they don't have
large.
Butter pecan there. But so my next favorite after that is cherry vanilla.
Mm.
They don't have butter pecan out there?
No.
Huh.
Hmm.
That's odd.
I'm a Maple View ice cream guy myself.
I've been there. Well, Mr. Nutter had really good, I guess it still is, I hadn't been there for a while, but had really good strawberry because that was his favorite.
Mm-hmm.
But I like it too.
I've been to Maple View too. That Maple View has good ice cream.
Yeah, they are a vineyard now. They sold the farm and it's a vineyard. It's beautiful out there.
Yeah.
Every time I go to Orange County, I always stop at Weaver Street Market, whichever one I'm in, and have to get some chocolate milk from Maple View. That is they used to come to the farmer's market that was on campus at NC State, and man, that was like the highlight of my week was getting chocolate milk.
I used to live right out there by that farm, in between the where the parlor is and where the farm is. I'd see those cows every day, and yeah. used to walk over and get milk out of the cooler or the cash box. But I told my kids recently, I used to walk my dog over to the ice cream parlor every night to get ice cream. They were like, "You got ice cream every night?"
Well, we want ice cream every night.
Me too. I'll go walk the dog for that.
That's what Rufus says. I walk ice cream every night. Is that what you say, Joyce?
That's what I say.
All right, Joyce, you keep everybody in good shape there in Sanford today.
I will try my best, and thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. All right.
I have a question. So earlier, Rufus, you said you have a yellow lycoris.
Yes. They come up about 2 weeks later than the regular lycoris.
Yeah.
And Dan and I mentioned mine seemed to have been at least 2 weeks earlier than normal.
Yeah, yeah. And I had a pink one blooming in July.
That's a different species.
Yeah, Springeri. But I usually, when I worked at Juniper Level Botanic Garden, Tony's collection is the largest in potentially the world. He bought the first and the second largest collections and added it to his. So now he's got the largest one.
Wow!
And they're doing their open house. This is the last weekend of the open house at Juniper Level Botanic Garden. So if you're listening, you should totally go. They've got more than 1,100 clones of lycoris of all of seven species out there, and they've gotten them from all over the world, all over the country, and they've figured out a lot of the taxonomic issues with the group because there's a lot of bad names in the industry. There's a lot of confusion, but the timing of the flower, but also the timing of the foliage emergence is how they know what they are. And if you want to see some cool lycoris, got to go to Juniper Level because pretty much all of July, August, September, and into October, there's a lycoris blooming somewhere in that garden. It's amazing.
You got to watch where you're digging.
Yeah.
Lycoris, because there's a certain period of time there when you see nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the funniest plant in the world. You see the naked lady and then the foliage comes.
Yeah. I was telling Rufus earlier, you know, we manage the Coker Arboretum, which is right
got about 20 seconds.
Middle of campus at UNC, and we've got probably 10,000 of these spider lily.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, are they available at the plant sale?
No, we won't have them available at the plant sale.
Sunday ride coming up. Sunday ride.
We'll be back.